Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, and welcome to The Parting Shot, your dose of everything pop culture. I'm H. Allen Scott. You know those people who are like, oh my God, can you believe they're putting out all this holiday stuff this early in the year? Well, I'm not one of those people, and neither is my guest today. You see, people like me and Danny Pellegrino, we're anytime, anywhere kind of holiday people. And it can be any holiday, really. I mean, because let's be real, it's not about the actual holiday, it's about the festiveness of it all. Like Danny said in our interview, he's just a festive person. He decorates tables to match the holiday for the year, which that's taking it too far for me, but I love that he does tablescapes. But it makes him the perfect person to write a book about Christmas. This month, Danny's latest book, The Jolliest Bunch, Unhinged Holiday Stories, will hit bookshelves everywhere. I'll drop a link in today's show notes so you can scoop yourself up a copy. The book comes on the heels of his New York Times bestselling first book of essays, How Do I Unremember This? Unfortunately, True Stories. So Danny has a lot to live up to with this book. And guess what? He does. He really does. The Jolliest Bunch is literally for every type of holiday person. If you love the holidays, you can laugh at it maybe a little bit, you'll love this book. And if you hate the holidays, you'll love this book too, because there's plenty of bah humbuggery in it too. And this balance of nostalgic and wit and sweetness is Danny's brand 1000%. It's just what he does so well, and it's what makes us such good friends. As you'll listen in our chat, he and I can literally have a million side conversations. And talking is what Danny does best, as many of you probably know because of his crazy popular podcast, Everything Iconic. We actually started our chat about that because it's one of those podcasts that personally terrifies me. Because, you know, it's not because of the content necessarily, which is Danny's sense of humor as he recaps shows and tells funny stories. But what scares me about his podcast is that he often does it alone. To spend an hour directly talking into a mic without a guest, that's a skill that not many people have, but Danny has it, and I am always impressed by it. So, go on and grab a snack, because I'll be right back with Danny Pellegrino.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So, Danny, lovely, amazing friend. I'm so glad you're here and we get to do this. This is so fun.
I know. I'm always so happy to see you and chat with you. And so thank you for having me.
I feel like we chat more virtually than we do in real life. And that needs to be corrected.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
It does.
That's the thing with podcasting. I don't know if you've found this too,
yes,
but it's like you're talking to people all the time. And so you almost just become so accustomed to catching up with people on a Zoom or on a podcast
or
recording.
Or text message or something. Yeah, totally.
All of a sudden you realize you're like, I haven't actually been to dinner with that person or gotten coffee with them or whatever.
I also feel like I text you pretty regularly. So it's like we hang out, but yet we don't.
I know. But I feel that way. And I hate that. But yeah, hopefully
it'll happen.
We'll see each other in person.
Well,
I'm also like kind of a recluse in general. But
same. I mean, if I have to go out, I'm definitely, I'm not going to do that.
I love like an early hang, like a 10 a.m. movie or like
yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm more of like a 4 p.m. situation, like a happy
love
hour
a 4
moment.
PM.
You know what I mean? I mean, I'm not drinking, but like a happy hour moment with food. Oh, that's good.
Right.
Oh, that's good. Well, one of the things that I love about you so much is that Everything Iconic podcast, but also just in general, like how you and I are kind of exactly the same person with almost identical same, like literally down the list, identical same interests. And when you were on my other podcast, it blew me away how much we liked everything that was the same, like everything. Do you find that happens with a lot of people?
The same way.
Does that happen to you often?
You know, I noticed with my podcast, Everything Iconic, that just people coming up to me when I would go on tour or wherever listeners would see me, they would tell me that they had similar stories or they liked something that I thought was so obscure that I talked about on the show that they also really loved. And so that made me realize early on in the podcast run of like, it's so important to just sort of celebrate the things that you love because you'll find the community of people who also love those things because you just sort of naturally gravitate towards each other the way you and I have gravitated towards each other. And so, I feel that it is strange sometimes when people get a reference or something really obscure.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Totally. Totally. Well, how did the podcast come about?
Yeah, I was doing stand-up and sketch comedy around town in Los Angeles and really struggling with my mental health. I'd fallen into a pretty deep depression and a friend recommended to me at the time because I had said I was never going to perform on stage again. I thought I just couldn't even get up on a stage in front of people. And a friend was like, you should start a podcast because you can do your show from home. You could perform your bits from home and you just need a microphone in yourself. And so it took a little while for me to get the courage to actually record an episode, but I did at the end of 2017 and it sort of snowballed from there. But it came out of me thinking that I could never perform again or be in front of people in that way on a stage. And oddly enough, the success of the podcast has led me to tour the podcast and get to meet people on stage. And it really, it opened up so many doors at a time that I thought everything was closed. And so I feel so grateful to the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I'm so impressed by your podcast is, I mean, I do this solo, but I talk to people all the time and everything else I do usually involves a lot of different people and it's conversation based. Whereas a lot of your podcast sometimes is just you talking, which is so to me overwhelming and scary. How do you prepare to do that for each episode?
How do I prepare? I don't know. I just, I'm so used to it now that it doesn't take as much. I think early on, I was maybe scared to do these episodes where it's just me alone because my show is about 80% of me recapping reality TV. So I recap a lot of Real Housewives or I dip into other shows. Sometimes I also recapped And Just Like That, which was an HBO show. But early on, it was hard for me to book guests. I didn't have a Rolodex to book people. And I realized I wanted to release episodes, but I didn't know how to book anyone. It was me. I'm still a one man band. And so I just couldn't book anyone. And so I had to either adapt and do my show at just where it's just me, or I wouldn't be able to do the show. And so I quickly just kind of found the way that works for me. And I know some listeners really like the episodes where it's just me talking. And then other people probably prefer when I have interviews and guests on. But I always just try to, I don't know, be authentic and enjoy what I'm doing. I try to recap the shows that I enjoy recapping. So I don't recap everything. I just try to pick one or two shows at a time and then also sprinkle in those interviews with celebrity guests throughout the time. But I have fun doing it on my own. And I have fun. I don't know. I like it now. And I can't imagine doing it any other way.
Well, one of the things that you and I text about often is guests that either we have or that we're preparing to have or that we desperately want to have. And I want to know, what are some guests that you're dying to have on the podcast?
Meg Ryan is the top of my list. And she is just the best. I love her. You've Got Mail is my all-time favorite movie. Same. So it's such a huge place in my heart. But I think she's given us so much. When Harry Met Sally, Sleepless. I mean, I could go on and on. And I also think she has a really interesting story. She hasn't talked to press quite all that much. And I think it's fascinating how the media really treated her from about 2008 and beyond. Mm-hmm. I think it's terrible how she was treated, whether it be her looks, her relationships, or just her personal life. And so I would love to talk to her. Other people, Mariah Carey is also a favorite of mine. I ask all my guests their favorite Mariah Carey song, so I would love to get to talk to her. But I kind of like any of those. Name a woman in the entertainment industry that's over 40, and I probably would love to talk to them. Because, you know, those are the most interesting people, the people who have been, it's unfortunately a male dominated industry. So I like when a woman has outwitted, outlasted, and outplayed the industry for a long period of time. And so I think they have the most interesting stories. They're the most fun to talk to. And I tend to gravitate towards their content the most. You know, I'm probably going to be rewatching a Meg Ryan movie on a Friday night rather than whatever the new Netflix thing is.
I tend to have to, because I'm the same way. And when I'm looking for interviews or looking at potential projects coming up, et cetera, I almost always go for the female led everything. So I sometimes have to actively be like, men exist. I have to focus on some men. Like, I have to interview some men.
See, I don't feel like I have to. I try really hard to just, like, if I'm interested in them, then I'll talk. Then, and sometimes, as I'm sure you notice, it's sometimes you might have a guest that you don't, you might know that the audience wouldn't be interested in, but you love. Yes. And what's fun about that is that sometimes that translates. So the listener might not have been interested in the guest. Mm-hmm. They listen, and because of your enjoyment of the interview and that person's work, then they become a fan. And you and I both love the Rosie O'Donnell show. And that's kind of like the thing I always go back to with her show, was she would have guests on that weren't popular or that were maybe had been in the industry for a while, but like young people didn't know. I just posted a clip of an episode that she put on her YouTube channel. And it was Lauren Bacall and NSYNC.
Yes.
And the whole audience is loaded with NSYNC fans. They're screaming. They've taken off school to see NSYNC. It was like early on in NSYNC's career. So the fever was high.
Yeah.
And she makes the whole audience sit through an interview with Lauren Bacall. That's two segments and a video package. And she even says, she's like, I had Lauren Bacall on the show once, but I'm having her back on for two whole segments because we didn't have enough time. And that all happens before NSYNC. So she makes everyone sit through. So long story short is, I think she did that so beautifully. And I always try to hang on to that, of like, follow your own gut of what you like. And and then maybe the listeners or the viewers or whoever will like that person, and you might make them become a fan.
I've always said, and you and I share this, that like everything that I've learned about interviewing, about how to perform as a performer, but also as a conduit of culture in a way, because I find I'm the person who's always like, you have to watch this, you have to check this person out, you have to do this. And I learned all of that from Rosie. And I learned all of how, first and foremost, I have to be a fan. I have to be an eager, inquisitive fan about this person, and then be professional enough to ask good questions and be thoughtful about everything. But I feel like you're the same way, that we share that sort of, that influence of Rosie is just so huge.
Yeah. And I think people respond to the emotion and the genuineness. There have only been a couple time or a few times that I've had guests that I wasn't interested in, maybe doing it as maybe a PR person reaches out to me and it's a big name or something. There's only been, I'd say under five in the 6 years that I've been doing the podcast. And I always feel like those are the worst ones. And it might be a big name, but if my heart wasn't in it, it's like, what did I do that for? Mm-hmm. And so I'm fortunate enough that because 80% or so of my show is just me, that I don't have to have guests on all the time. So I just try to have the people I really like on and not worry about too much else. And if somebody doesn't like it, they just will listen to the next one and hopefully we'll get them on the next one.
Go ahead.
But I don't think it works to, I think it's important to have at least some sort of passion for who you're interviewing. Otherwise, what's the point? No one's really going to get anything out of it, including the listeners, myself, whoever.
I do have to tell you that I recently ran into Jack Quaid at a show. We both were doing a show at the same venue. And it was, I took everything in my body. I mean, he's a very talented actor. He's, you know, talented on his own right completely. But everything in my body to be like, you're Meg Ryan's son. You're Meg Ryan. Like, literally, I said that once to Rob Lowe's brother, Chad Lowe. I literally said, you're Chad Lowe's or you're Rob Lowe's brother. And he looked at me, and he and Hillary Swank got divorced shortly after that. I'm just saying, maybe I was the sign.
Influence.
Maybe I had the awakening for her. I don't know.
Go ahead. I just saw Rob Lowe's son. He was like sort of sitting next to me, but like there was a window between us, but we were 2 feet away. And I was meeting a friend for coffee, and the whole time I'm just like, wait a minute.
Yeah. You know, like, he's dreamy too. He's dreamy.
Yeah, yeah. Not as, I wouldn't say as, no, Rob Lowe to me is like one of the hottest of all time. I mean, he's beautiful.
Completely. Yeah. Totally.
Just pretty. I like a pretty man too. Like he's got like those pretty features.
Someone that's also going to look good as a woman if they tried hard. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's, he could go anyway.
He's just pretty. Like he's a gorgeous man.
Yes. Yeah. I fully agree. Your second book. So great, because I know another thing that we share in common, which is not a shocker, is our love for the holidays and anything holiday themed. And it doesn't even really matter what holiday, except your book is very focused on the Christmas holidays, of course. But you love all the holidays, right? Like you're a holiday person.
I'm a festive person. I love decorating for whatever holiday it is. I'm a huge fan of tablescaping, which I know is so gay of me, but I love to just go in. That to me is so relaxing to go into the dining room with all the stuff I got from Home Goods and just like rearrange and figure it out for each holiday season. But yeah, my book is called The Jolliest Bunch, and it focuses on the Christmas holidays, but there's a Halloween chapter in there. Mm-hmm. There's some Thanksgiving and, you know, all sorts of stuff. But I love the holiday seasons. And also there are times I hate the holiday seasons. And I think this book is for those people too. I know it can be a stressful time, and it could be a lonely time, an exhausting time. And I wanted the book to be for all of those people, whether if you love the holidays, hopefully you pick it up and feel joy and you'll be thinking about your own family memories. And if you hate the holidays, hopefully you'll be just able to sit by the fire and laugh and have a good time reading these chapters.
That's something that surprised me about the book, is that like, I think your public presence is probably you're a very happy, cheerful person, and but I also know you to be fairly sardonic, and you can have a cutting wit, if you will, about you. And I was surprised at some of the chapters that were, you know, maybe not so pro holidays. Was it difficult narrowing down the stories you wanted to tell in the book?
I didn't find it difficult narrowing it down. I wrote a book that came out last year called How Do I Unremember This? And as I was writing that, I found that a lot of the stories I wanted to tell in that book were holiday themed. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept writing. And I think the holidays are so filled with emotion that there's so many stories when I was thinking about it. And so I didn't feel like it was hard to cut them down, but I just wanted to make sure that there was a balance of really funny, really heartfelt, a little drama. You know, I like that in any sort of thing that I consume. I like when stuff is mixed and you're having a really good time, and then all of a sudden it hits you with something that gets you in your feels, or hits you with something romantic, or hits you with something dramatic. And so I was mostly focused on, do I have those layers? Because I think those make up the holidays. I think loneliness is a huge thing for the holidays. So huge. I didn't want to ignore that or pretend like that doesn't exist. And so I just wanted to be able to explore all those different facets. And so I'd say that was the most challenging part.
Was there a particular story from the book that like stands out to you as sort of like if you're having to sell the book by sharing one snippet of a story, what would it be?
Yeah, I think anytime my family, there's a chapter that opens the book about my mom and Christmas Eve, and she has this sort of meltdown, and she has this meltdown every Christmas Eve, as I think most moms and dads or whoever is kind of in charge of the holiday do. And so I love that chapter because it reminds me of my mom. But then there's this one chapter in the book that is completely fiction. So it's not based on my real life. But as I was putting the book together, I noticed that there were all these stories about Santa Claus and so many movies about Santa Claus. And I thought, well, there's not much about Mrs. Claus. And so I had this fantasy of like, what does she get up to? And so I wrote a whole chapter that's a fictional take on Mrs. Claus. And she takes the sleigh on Christmas Eve and she goes to Vegas with her girlfriend and her gay friend. And they have like a debaucherous night in Vegas. It's sort of like Bad Santa with Mrs. Claus, or like The Hangover or something like that. It's like very raunchy and silly. And I loved writing that because it got me able to explore a different side of my writing. But also it was fun because, like I said, in so many of these holiday movies and stuff, it's like the man gets to have all the fun and the craziness. And so I wanted to explore that. So those are two favorites of mine. But there's also, I was just talking to a friend, there's a chapter about this book, Now and Then. Oh. It was a movie called Now and Then. And when I was younger, I wanted from the Scholastic Book Fair this book by Now and Then. And I had ordered it at the holiday Scholastic Fair, and something else had been delivered. And I was devastated at the time. But there's a chapter about that whole thing that I think sort of encompasses the heart and also the silliness of the book. Yeah, I hope.
Totally. I loved Now and Then so much. Oh my God. So good. I do have to share with you, because I don't think I've ever told you this. So I'm Jewish now, but I was raised in a mixed household. I had a Catholic dad, et cetera. And I remember the moment that I stopped believing in Santa. And it was because I was probably similar to you, a very eager child. So I could not sleep before Christmas and all of the things. And I remember I went upstairs. My bedroom was in the basement. I went upstairs to see like if Santa had come and the decorations. And I saw my father putting out presents naked in the living room.
Naked?
Why was he? Because he slept naked. And I think they were maybe wrapping in his room or something. And he just brought a presents out. And it was the most scarring. Literally, I was like, okay, well, Santa's my naked dad. I guess that dream is over.
So, Santa's my naked dad. That could be the title of your holiday book.
I know. I should do that.
I love it.
Oi. So when did the Santa moment stop for you?
Very early on, I remember my mom would write on the present, it would say from Santa, but it was her handwriting very clearly. Yeah. The only difference she would do is she would make all the letters of the word Santa capitalized. Mm-hmm. But it was still the same pen, the same everything. And so I think once I was able to sort of like understand that was when it happened. But then I remember trying to hide it and hold on to the Santa. So even though I knew for a couple of years, I remember trying to still pretend when my mom would hand me the gift that said Santa, like I would still sort of pretend for a couple of years. So like I don't even think it was for me. It was like, I didn't want to let down my parents. I'm always so worried about somebody else's feelings. And so
See, I would be worried that I wouldn't get as good of gifts if I didn't believe in Santa, like in that situation, you know what I mean? So I have to play the part just to get the good gifts.
Wait, do you have a favorite gift that you received?
Oh, wow. That is a great question. A favorite gift. Oh, man. Yes, I do. When I was a kid, my parents separated and everything. And whenever I would go to my mom's house, I'd always complain that I didn't have a VHS player in my room because I had one in my room at my dad's place. And one year my mom gave me a VHS, like a combo TV VHS situation. And it was a game changer because I was a Blockbuster kid. I lived at Blockbuster like multiple times a week. All my money, everything went to Blockbuster. And so that was a big gift. What about you?
Well, by the way, I just saw on YouTube, you can like watch videos of Blockbuster in the 90s. Like, so people have posted just people casually strolling through Blockbuster in 1993. I literally just discovered this. So I'll send you a link because I feel like you would like it. It's just please watching. But there was one particular Christmas that I had wanted the 101 Dalmatian. It was like a plush patch 101 Dalmatian from the movie had been re-released or something. This was probably 1990 or 89 or something. And so I wanted it so badly, and I had gotten the patch stuffed animal, and then my brothers had gotten the Nintendo. Mm. So this was probably 80s then, because I think Nintendo was like 86, 87. But I remember it was like the best Christmas because they set up the Nintendo, and I was so young and I didn't even know about it, but I remember just like seeing it on the screen and being mesmerized by Super Mario. And we played all day. And so even though that wasn't my gift, I just was holding my plush stuffed animal while we all played video games. And I don't know, it just sort of sticks out.
That's such a fun memory. Well, that's another thing that I think for a lot of people, especially people in our generation who, you know, people aren't having kids as early, people aren't getting married as early, they're staying single for longer, all these things, that I find that when I left my family's home, my holiday traditions and sort of how I participate actively in the holidays changed, and sort of how I engage in the holidays. And I want to know, like, how did it change? How did you find your own holiday traditions separate from your family?
I notice it's still changing. I think the pandemic was a change for everybody as well. And I don't know, I've been trying to come up with things with my boyfriend, and I've lived together for a handful of years now. And so we try to come up with our own little things, but I don't know, it's forever evolving. I think it's so fun to reminisce. And that was one of the fun things about writing this book, was being able to reminisce about those times from my childhood that I really loved, that I thought, oh, I want to hang on to that thing when I have kids or as I move into my own adult life. And so I was exploring those things that I wanted to do. And and the things that maybe I looked at and was like, why did we do that? Why did I, whatever. So I don't know. It's forever changing, but I think the most important thing is to just relax a little bit into the holidays. And I always say that to people because a lot of people are feel so much pressure to get the perfect gifts and to go to every holiday party they're invited to. And then suddenly January comes and you look back in the last couple of months and you're thinking, I didn't even enjoy it. There was so much festivity and there was so much beautiful music and lights and colors and all that stuff that is so joyous and fun and cozy and warm. And sometimes we get to January and we didn't enjoy any of it because we were so focused on what we have to do and and all those traditions that we've done 100 years and just doing them because we've done them every year. And so that's one of the important things, I think, is like letting go of some of those things so that you can enjoy the process of the holiday season. So just because you made a specific cookie every year does not mean you have to do it this year.
Or any cookies. Yes.
If that means that you're not going to have as much fun this holiday season, then get rid of those cookies and order some cookies from your favorite place, or do something that makes you feel good instead of going to the holiday work party that you don't really want to go to, or doing those things that you don't want to do. I think it's so important to just find some time for you and whatever you like about the holidays, like do that and don't be so tied to those traditions just because they're traditions.
Totally. Now, one of the things that, I mean, I have two more questions for you. And this question is, I think, one of the most important questions that either of us can ask each other is,
I can't wait.
It is one of the things that we respond to in our life is pop culture and movies and TV. So if you had to pick one movie to get into the holiday spirit that you watch at the beginning of the holiday season, but I know us and we could never, ever just say one. So I need to know what are briefly the holiday movies that you have to start with.
List is long, like Home Alone 1, Home Alone 2. I love Jingle All the Way is unhinged. And
that was a plot twist. I didn't see that coming.
It's crazy. Also, in terms of Muppet content, I'm a huge Muppet fan. And I know people love Muppet Christmas Carol, which is flawless, perfect. We love it. But Muppet Family Christmas to me is like the one that I have to go back to all the time. And then I'd say Family Stone for the drama.
Yes.
And finally, Christmas Vacation, which really my book, I really wanted it to feel like a book version of Christmas Vacation.
Yep.
It
has that vibe. Fully has that vibe.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. That was the goal. My last book, How Do I Unremember This? I heard from a lot of people, there was this family vacation that sort of spanned three chapters. And so many people were saying, oh my God, it reminded me of Vacation, or your family is like the Griswolds or whatever. And it felt so apt because then for this book, it was like, that's what I wanted. And and I wanted it to feel like you're watching Christmas Vacation, where there's like a little heart and a little drama, but it's a lot of laughs, hopefully. Yeah.
I would have to say, I mean, Family Stone and Christmas Vacation are like high at the top of my list. I also say Mickey's Christmas Carol. It's only 26 minutes, but it's incredible. And it like just gives me everything. But the number one for me, and no one really ever mentions this, is While You Were Sleeping. It doesn't feel like a Christmas movie, but it is a Christmas movie.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many of them. I have a holiday movie podcast where my co-host and I, we recap and break down these holiday movies every year. And we keep thinking at the end of every season, we say there's not enough for another season. And then we look at the list and there's so many. There's so many holiday things, some good, some bad. I just watched Little Women, the 90s version for the first time.
It's so
warm and cozy. Yes. And I became like a fan of it after seeing it. I think I had seen it when I was little, but seeing it again as an adult, the 90s version was just incredible. Was lovely.
Incredible. Yeah. Well, my last question for you is, and I think this is just also important, what is the one holiday food or tradition that you think just absolutely needs to die? It needs to stop and then we need to get over it.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Okay. Well, I think there are cookies that we could do away with.
Oh, yes.
That become cookies that people just make for traditions. Mm-hmm. In my family, my mom always does those snowball cookies. And I just think they're a little dry. And that they're supposed
to be the powdered sugar ones?
They're like the powdered dry cookie.
They're shit.
And I like a soft kind of gooey thing.
Yeah.
And so I'd say those probably my least favorite, although I know Linda Pellegrino is not going to like that I said that. But I'd say get rid of those maybe. Yeah.
I support that. They are kind of shit cookies. Anything dry, you know, I think maybe they're meant to be dipped in something, but still if a cookie has to be dipped, is it worth it?
Right. And by the way, I say this as someone who will eat 10 of those in one sitting. So it's not something I'm like, will give up or stop eating by any means. I just like, yeah, I think if there were other things, I'd pick the other things first.
And that is also the definition of Christmas for me, or the holidays in general, is gluttony. Me sitting there being like, I know I don't like this, but I can't stop eating it. So I'm just going to, I have to finish right. it, you know?
There's so much stuff. I like when all the candies come out and they're all seasonal.
Same. Which,
here's a trick I heard. You should always buy the seasonal candies at the store because they're fresher. So you never know when the store is putting, I know, isn't that smart? Because you never know when the store is just putting out Snickers or whatever. But you know that if it's the holiday version, even though this product is the same, if it's the holiday packaging, they're supposed to be, they're always fresh, fresher.
Oh, wow. Hot tip from Danny Pellegrino. Well, Danny, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. I love you so much.
Oh my God, I love you. And thank you so much. I hope everyone gets the Jolliest Bunch, which I know it's Christmas and it's gross to be promoting a Christmas book so early in the year, but
no,
just do it.
It's not
Let's
at all.
Just embrace it.
I love it. Everyone should buy it. I mean, who doesn't love Christmas in October, right? I mean, frankly, when the stores put out all the Halloween stuff, but also maybe like a little bit of the holiday stuff, like at Disneyland, for example, because I go to Disneyland a lot. And I love when it's like Halloween and Christmas and Hanukkah and all of the different holidays just sort of mashed into one in that last sort of like 2 weeks of October. Oh, so exciting. Anyway, let me know what you thought of today's episode. And if you're one of those people who also loves when they put out the Christmas stuff in like August, I'm H. Allen Scott on everything. And thanks for listening to Newsweek's Parting Shot. I hope you're able to leave a little rating and review wherever you're listening to this podcast. And for the latest news and podcasts, go to newsweek.com and follow Newsweek on all the social platforms. And while you're there, subscribe to my newsletter For the Culture. It's really fun. I'm recapping all of like Survivor and The Golden Bachelor all season long. It's unhinged. It is a little unhinged, but you'll love it. Until then, watch something fun and have a great day.